We are lucky enough to live, work, and record this podcast on the land of the Kaurna people. We acknowledge their ongoing connection to sea country and the importance of Indigenous knowledge in caring for the ocean.
Welcome to The Ocean Pod, a podcast about all things to do with marine science and the ocean. You are joined by myself, Professor Bronwyn Galanders, and my co-host, Dr. Nina Wooten. We're both marine scientists from the University of Adelaide with a huge passion for all things to do with the ocean. Hi, Nina.
Hi, Bronwyn. We've got a great episode lined up today where we'll be talking about how to become a marine scientist. We'll share a bit about our own journeys into marine science and offer some tips and advice for anyone thinking about following a similar path. But before we get into that, we need to do our favourite segment, Tide Talk, where we can share something ocean-related that caught our attention this week. Bronwyn, what have you got for your Tide Talk this week?
I've got some news around new seafood labelling laws. So starting the 1st of July, although people do have a year to before it will be being enforced. So there's new legislation that's come into effect from the 1st of July. And under these new laws, seafood needs to be labelled as either Australian, imported or of mixed origin. So while the laws have started 1st of July, they'll be enforced from 1st of July next year. So this has got significant implications for our seafood industry. Our domestic seafood market's currently valued at about $3 billion. And then we have more than 60% of our seafood in Australia is imported. And so under these new laws that have come in, restaurants, pubs, takeaway shops, including fish and chip vans, have got to indicate whether use the AIM labelling method it's being described as. So customers will start seeing an A for Australian, I for imported or M for mixed origin. And so the hospitality industries are going to have to start using this similar labelling system to what you see in grocery stores.
Oh, it's also in hospitality. That's really cool.
It's applying to hospitality from the 1st of July.
Oh, that is good. I feel like that. I actually will find that really useful, I think, because when I go out, I eat a lot of seafood. When I go out, I always end up asking the fish shop owners, oh, do you know where this is from?
Yeah, I do too. And in fact, actually, our son once said at a restaurant when we're saying, is this locally caught snapper or is it from, where's it from sort of thing? Our son said, oh, don't worry, they're just marine biologists. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute.
Yeah, I feel it's good to be transparent with these things, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Positive steps forward, for sure.
So, Nina, what's your Tide Talk?
This week I'm bringing a paper to talk about. So here's a recent paper that came out in Current Biology by Weiss et al. There's a range of different authors on this study. I think that Weiss is from the USA, so somewhere in the centre of whale research. There's some other authors from the UK and the USA. And this is a really cool study that's been getting a bit of social media attention, actually, because they've managed to document killer whales using this sort of grooming technique where they are going down underwater and collecting some sort of kelp, and then they're sort of using it in a partnership to help groom each other.
Oh, wow.
It's really cool. It's the first observation of this. I think they've seen whales do it for, like, using tools for foraging techniques, but they've never seen them using tools for grooming.
So
and two whales together kind of spin around.
They grab the kelp in their mouth and then use it across the other whale.
Yeah, so apparently it's these short lengths of bull kelp, and they sort of position it between themselves and their partner, and they roll the kelp along their bodies in this sort of swimming method. There's a video that they've managed to capture. So I think the way that they actually gathered this data is they had drones flying out over the whales, so it's quite like non-invasive in terms of they're not having boats up there watching them. And they observed, I think there was like 12 days of observations, and 8 of the days they saw this method that they're using, which they've actually given a new term to, which is allokelping. So other animals use allo-grooming. So you've seen probably some allo-grooming with, like, gorillas use it, lots of monkeys use it. It's a classic kind of tool where they work together to keep themselves clean. But then they've called this aloe kelping because they're using kelp. And aloe, I think, is like a Greek word for other. So kind of working together with each other using this kelp to clean themselves, which is crazy.
How very innovative.
I know.
That's very cool.
The killer whales.
Yeah.
Very innovative. So I'll share in the show notes a video link, actually, because I think I watched it a few times and it's really cool.
That'd be great.
For sure.
In today's episode, we're diving into something a little different. We're going to talk about how to become a marine scientist. This episode is for all our listeners who either have become marine scientists, want to become marine scientists, or are interested in how Nina and I got to where we currently are in our careers.
So, Bronwyn, we get asked this all the time. What actually is marine science? What kinds of jobs are out there? And how do you even start a career in the ocean? So we thought we'd chat through our own journeys, share some advice, open up a bit about what working in this field is really like.
And honestly, it's one of the best jobs in the world. You get to work on things that matter, explore wild and wonderful places. I can't believe where I've been. And you spend your days asking questions about the ocean.
I know, that's one of my favourite things about being a marine scientist is the travel that comes with it, to be honest. But also it's such a varied field. So people often picture someone diving on a reef with dolphins, but being a marine scientist can also mean coding in a lab, working on fisheries policies, flying drones, interviewing communities about sea country management. It's very broad and it's also very versatile, and you can follow sort of what pathway interests you, which is something that I really love about science generally, but marine science especially.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've had people say, you know, but I can't dive. You don't need to be able to dive.
You don't need to dive, definitely not.
So let's start with that. What is a marine scientist?
So to me, a marine scientist is anyone who studies the ocean in some way. That could be the biology of the marine life, the chemistry of the seawater, ocean currents and climate, or even also the social and cultural dimensions of how we use and care for the ocean.
And there's just so many different specialisations. So marine biologists might study specific animals or habitats, marine ecologists look at how those species interact and form ecosystems. Then there's physical oceanographers that are studying currents and tides and waves. Biological oceanographers focused more on the biological oceanography. Social scientists that might research human behaviour around ocean use or governance.
Yeah, so it is really broad. There's also people that work in aquaculture, marine engineering, education, conservation, consulting, and so much more than that. Marine science is more than just one thing. It's a whole world of possibilities. And I think one thing that's really important that we highlight early on here is that often people pair marine science with being a marine biologist. And often it's not just marine biology. That's one tiny slice of this pie of all these different types of marine science that you can be doing. So don't narrow yourself in thinking you only have to be doing the biology of it. It's definitely a great aspect, but there's so many other options and opportunities as well. So I thought as part of this episode, we might turn the spotlight on ourselves for a moment. Usually we interview different marine scientists, and when we do interview them, we ask them what drew them into working in the marine environment in the first place. Now, Mum and Dad actually said to me, who were listeners of the podcast, I want to hear about your and Bronwyn background and how you guys got into loving the marine environment. So here, this one's for you guys, Mum and Dad, but we're going to talk about us for a minute. So Bronwyn, what drew you into a career in marine science, and did you grow up loving the ocean?
So, interestingly, I didn't grow up loving the ocean. I didn't really realise that I loved the ocean until I was at university. So I grew up on a farm and I had a natural love for animals and all those sorts of things. But it was probably during my undergraduate when I did a dive course, like many years ago, and got to scuba dive underwater, and I thought, wow, this is just incredible.
Yeah.
And that's probably what drew me to head towards the marine biology area.
Yeah. So where was your farm?
So it was on Banks Peninsula out from Christchurch in New Zealand.
Yeah.
A sheep and cattle farm.
Sheep and cattle.
Yeah.
Bronwyn and I have very many similarities, which is so funny. I think we realised this. One of the first times we first properly met, I think I realised that Bronwyn was also from a farm. And it's just, it's funny
it's
the way the world works.
It's an amazing lifestyle. Yeah. So, Nina, what about you? What inspired you to follow a career in marine science?
I mean, I'm very similar to you, actually. I also grew up on a farm. I was about 100 kilometres inland. The farm I grew up on is near Hamilton in Western Victoria. So our closest beaches are Warrnambool, Portland, Port Fairy sort of way. And we didn't spend a lot of holidays in the marine environment. So I spent a lot of my summer over at Mallacoota, in the sort of eastern, top eastern side of Victoria, and also some of the New South Wales coastline there, southern New South Wales, which is a beautiful spot to be. But I didn't actually spend that much time in the marine environment. I wasn't like someone who loves snorkeling, or you hear these stories of kids who just like can't get out of the water. I wasn't really necessarily that, but I loved being outside and I loved animals. I actually wanted to be a vet, which we'll talk about in a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I guess we had this inquisitive nature to be outside and do things in the environment and the ecology of the environment as such, and that sort of led me into marine science.
We used to go on a beach holiday, actually, during the summer with just Mum, because Dad was part of a, before we'd moved to Banks Peninsula, he was part of a farming group of brothers that were big cropping farms, and
oh,
that's
wow.
when they used to do all their cropping over summer. We'd go to this little place called Le Bon's Bay on Banks Peninsula, which is absolutely beautiful. But we used to be able to go swimming, but Mum would make us have these cold showers because they had no water, because she wouldn't let us sleep with sand all over ourselves.
Yeah, because you had to rinse off. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah,
it is. I think that like Australia and New Zealand is kind of similar. Like we all intrinsically have a love for the coast and the ocean. Like whether you grow up there or not, the ocean is such an amazing place. And I think we do love that. I loved swimming. Like I was always quite a strong swimmer at school. So I would love swimming in the ocean, but it just was hard because we were so inland, so I'd spend a lot of time swimming in like dams, or we had a swimming pool and I swam there. But it's funny how you do have these little memories of times in the ocean that you remember it sparked a bit of love.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So Bronwyn, what about your career? Where and what did you study at uni? Your career has been quite long. Not that I'm saying that it's a long career, but it's been long and successful. Let's talk about where you started, how you got into academia, those sort of things.
Sure. So originally when I went to the university, I went to the University of Canterbury in Christchurch, and
okay.
I just studied a general science degree, majoring in like zoology, botany, that sort of thing. And it was not until, it was during my third year of my degree is when I did the dive course. And then I thought, oh, maybe I'll do marine biology or marine science. So I actually went to the University of Otago for my master's degree, which was in marine science. So it covered off on physical oceanography, chemistry, marine science. Like there was even
Oh, so this is more of like a master's by coursework kind
no,
of process?
No, it was a master's. So it was a master's by research, but there was a whole year of coursework.
Okay.
So I ended up spending like the master's was 2.5 years. So
okay.
a year of coursework and then a year of research. And so I actually worked on algae there, which is kind of bizarre because I now work more on fish.
Yeah.
But at the time, it's just where I went. And then when I moved to Australia to do a PhD, that's when I got more into the fish ecology side of things, doing a PhD at the University of Sydney. That was absolutely amazing. I used to go out scuba diving to collect data.
Oh, scuba diving.
And do it regularly.
Yeah.
I mean, you do get big swells and rough seas and those sorts
so
of things.
So were you working on otoliths then?
So I had a chapter of my PhD that was associated with some of the otolith chemistry. Most of my PhD was focused on the eastern blue grouper
okay.
and more about understanding its biology.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, really cool.
Yeah.
And then you finished your PhD, and then I know that you worked in Sydney for a little bit before you came over here.
Yeah, so I worked at New South Wales. It was New South Wales Fisheries back then, New South Wales Department of Primary Industries. I worked on this great project that was funded through the Fisheries Research Development Corporation all those years back on yellowtail kingfish. And that was, again, it was a lot around the biology of them, if we could age them, when do they reproduce, all those sorts of things. And yeah, but between when the people had written the grant and when we got the grant, it had become a major sashimi species. So I used to have to go to the fish markets to scrounge the carcasses of yellowtail kingfish so I could get the biological bits.
Wow,
that we
needed. How cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you moved over to Adelaide.
Yeah, so I did spend a bit of time in Tasmania as well. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Sean, my husband, had a position there
down
in Tasmania. And I went there. Tassie was an amazing place. I was probably still doing bits of work from New South Wales.
And
then I basically knew I was coming back to Sydney when I got a fellowship, an ARC fellowship. And so at that point, when I was in Tassie, I just made the most of hiking everywhere I could because it's such a beautiful country.
You do have to make the most of the place you're in at the time, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely.
And then we were back in Sydney for like, I think I spent 4 years back there. Sean got a position over here and that's when I got my next fellowship over here.
Oh, hey, so you're in fellowship still then? And then you've been
here. I've done 10 years on soft money, believe it or not.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
So what's soft money, I guess?
Like research fellowships where you don't have a continuing position, so you jump from one thing to the next.
I'm on soft money.
Yeah, I did a year at New South Wales DPI and I thought it was the best thing out. You know, I got a one-year position and then I'm thinking, oh, I need a longer position. So I got a 3-year fellowship and then a 5-year fellowship. And then eventually I'm thinking, man, I need something that's a bit more than just.
Yeah, they build on themselves, I guess. Yeah.
But something always comes up, is my way of thinking.
So when did you become like permanent staff here at University of Adelaide?
Back in 2003 would it have been, 2004. Okay. So I've been, like, I first came to the University of Adelaide in 2001. And so I've been here almost 25 years.
Wow. So then you get your special 25-year celebration.
Yeah, well, hopefully.
Yeah. And then you kind of work your way up, I guess, like you were a lecturer and then you kind of work into become associate professor and then now you're obviously a professor and also head of school of biological sciences.
That's right.
So Bronwyn's worked her way up through the ranks to be very much senior, I would say,
say I've not shied from administrative responsibilities. So
that's
I've done positions in our school as an associate head of research education, of research, and then I've done deputy dean research roles in the faculty.
Yeah.
Done head of school roles as well, which I really enjoy. I really enjoy the mentoring of others. So initially it would start out with honours and PhD students and seeing their excitement. And now it's all staff. Like, it's just so exciting seeing other people do really well.
Wow, what a successful and diverse career you've had, though. That's really special.
Mm. Yeah, it has been really special. I've been really fortunate.
Mm.
And when you've got a passion, it makes it easy.
Yeah, exactly.
So what about you, Nina?
So my career, I actually remember the moment that I decided to do marine science, I guess, a bit more. So I started off in studying a Bachelor of Science at the University of Melbourne. I went to Melbourne because, as I said before, grew up on a farm in Victoria and everyone seemed to go to Melbourne for uni. And I thought, why would I go six hours away from the farm when I can be only 3 hours away from the farm? So I went to Melbourne, but I always had this goal of becoming a vet. I always wanted to be a vet. It was like, ever in high school, we did these like tests that was telling us what kind of career we should follow. Actually, interestingly, when I look back at my results the other week, I found out that my top was meant to be a marine scientist.
Oh, wow.
And second was a vet, but I was like, I'm going to be a vet. Decided that I wanted to do that, was studying a Bachelor of Science, and then ended up swapping into the University of Adelaide vet degree because I had a place here and I deferred it. And I think I went down to Melbourne and realised that actually it's really competitive to get into the post-grad vet. Their vet works a bit differently. You don't get in early. You kind of have to get good grades. And
but
I was not getting the best grades.
Just as well that you came back across here and realised that, marine biology is much better than being a
exactly.
vet.
Exactly. And also, conveniently, I met my husband during my vet degree. So he is now a qualified vet. So it's very handy to have a vet in the family, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
I did vet for a year and a half. And then I realised, actually, I think I want to go back and just do a science degree at the University of Adelaide. So this kind of shows people, I guess, you can swap around a bit and you'll get there eventually. I was doing science. I majored in ecology and evolutionary biology. But halfway through third year, I got actually, shout out to our friend Sophie Dolling, who sent me this study tour and was like, I think you should apply for this study tour. And she was also going on it. I didn't know Sophie really at all. Like, I'd sat with her in a few troots or something. And it was a study tour to China to study aquaculture in China. And Bronwyn was leading it. So
yeah, with Pablo.
With Pablo, that's right. And I remember I sat on the plane on the way over next to Bronwyn, and I'd never met Bronwyn before. He probably had lectured us, but I just, like, you don't really talk to your lecturers that much when you're in undergrad. It's all a bit scary. And I was watching on my screen Sex in the City, like the TV show, and I was so mortified. I was like, Bronwyn is going to see what I'm watching. As now I know you well, I feel like you wouldn't have actually cared. But at the time I was like,
I probably wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah,
either.
She wouldn't have noticed. You're probably marking assignments or something on there. And then, so I did that. And then after that study tour, I was like, I love, love, love not just the ocean, but like fisheries, aquaculture, marine science. I loved all of it. And I was so interested in just I guess, like, the inquisitive nature in me wants to find out why things are the way they are and, like, figuring out problems. And I think a lot of marine science is that, because there's so much we don't know about the ocean.
And that was a great study tour too. I remember going and seeing, do you remember the seahorse culture?
Seahorses, yeah. And then a lot of people in China eat seahorses. They dry them and put them into pills because it's good for aphrodisiacs or something, yeah. I think. It's
interesting. I'm still never quite sure whether the farming helps legitimise some of this, but it's like they can't produce the amount that they need through farming, and so then there's potential
issues to go on people to catch them in the wild. Yeah, it's a tricky one. Anyway, I finished my undergrad, decided to do honours, did honours with Bronwyn, looked at marine protected areas and used these big underwater cameras called baited remote underwater video cameras to look at fish populations around Coffin Bay and Venus Bay in South Australia, which I loved it. Lots of field work, which was really fun. And then decided to Bronwyn, I really want to do a PhD. I always have loved research. And luckily Bronwyn said, of course, you can do a PhD with me. And I got a scholarship and everything lined up perfectly. And then I started a PhD in microplastics in seafood. And that was back at the start of 2018. Did that for 3.5 years. I learned a lot about myself, microplastics, seafood, and I think I became a much, much better scientist. A PhD is like a really good way to improve your science skills. It's like getting a little toolbox of how to become a good scientist and be out in the big wide world. But as it turned out, when I finished my PhD, I had been offered some funding to work on a project in social sciences, and Bronwyn was able to cover the rest of my salary for a period. And then ever since then, we've been on soft money, covering my postdoc salary, but we have lots of projects we work on now, so I'm not so worried anymore about I'm worried about funding. I think you always are in postdoc land, but I have a good amount of job security for now, which means I can really chase projects that I love, and it's very special to things that I want to do. And now I do lots of different things with my day-to-day life, and all thanks to Bronwyn, really. But part of it is also doing the Ocean Pod, which is very fun.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that I really look forward to each week.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess going on from that, what does a day in the life look like for you? It's hard for you, right, Bronwyn, because you're now head of school, so you have a lot of different jobs. But what would a day of the life, maybe do a bit of an average of what you might get up to in a month or so?
Yeah. So there's obviously a lot around just running of the school and meetings with people and those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But if I think more about the research, then there can be a day where you go to, say, a research workshop, if you like, that goes day long and you're talking about aspects of your particular research project or something like that.
Yeah.
I do still love to get into the field, but it gets more challenging to do a whole day out in the field. And so, but certainly in my earlier career, I would have done loads of field work and I would have gone out, even when I was, like, say, a lecturer or a senior lecturer, I would have gone and done field work with some of my PhD students, my honours students, whereas now perhaps the postdocs would do some of that initial field work.
Yeah, that's me, so lucky me.
Yeah, but lots of work, writing, analysing data, those sorts of things.
You do a lot of like creative thinking as well, I think, because you still come up with a lot of the ideas.
Yeah, I do come up with ideas, but I need a bit more time to do the creative thinking. I feel like you've got little blocks of time and it can be quite hard.
Yeah, you need a certain mindset.
Block out some time, that really helps.
Yeah, definitely. But you do have a lot of diversity. Like, I feel like absolutely. I always, whenever I see you, you're doing something different and you're always meeting with different people and learning different things. And I think that's why we come into science in the first place. You might not be doing just marine science, but you're learning about the way the world works.
And the
exciting.
School, like the School of Biological Sciences, has some amazing researchers working on really diverse things. So it's always exciting catching up with them and hearing about what they're up to.
Yeah, what people are doing exactly.
Mm. And what about you, Nina? What's a day in the life like for you now?
So I do a mix of lab and field work. I do a lot of education and community work as well. So I spend a fair bit of time going to schools and talking to students about marine science and our beautiful ocean that we have and also how we can protect it. I do unfortunately spend a lot of time at a computer screen, either doing stats, analysing stats, writing, doing grant proposals, trying to get some more money to pay for some of these research projects we're doing. I supervise a lot. So a lot of my meetings are taken up with students that we're supervising. So we have a few honours students and PhD students that we are helping to do their projects. And that always ends up taking a bit more time than you plan, which it's good. I love helping others, but it does eat into your day sometimes. And then, yeah, I do also a lot of work with traditional owners. So I spend bits of time away in the field. I go up to Arnhem Land a bit. We've just got some funding to go up to the Tiwi Islands and do some work, which
really
is really exciting. I know, it's very exciting. And I try as much as I can to do field work, even if just a day that I can get out there. It really sparks my love for what I do a lot, being able to get out in the field.
I think being under the ocean, like scuba diving, it gives you the space because there's not somebody just going yep, yep, yep at you. Like,
yeah, you
know?
You can't. You, that's it's the thing. You're thinking.
Think.
Yeah. I do some of my best thinking scuba diving. It's where my mind is the clearest, I reckon, under the ocean.
Cool.
It's really cool.
Great. I really love hearing about how we all got into our careers and how we got into marine science. And I find it really interesting that neither of us, while we were at high school, thought this is where we'd be now. And if I'm being brutally honest, I actually probably thought I was going to be an accountant.
Oh, God, I shouldn't say that. But, that would have been a different career.
I need to be a bit careful about what I say there too because
I'm sure it would be fascinating for those that are accountants.
Yeah, I used to love the numbers and the maths and that sort of thing.
Well, we still have to do that in science.
That's right. You do. But, Nina, for those who do know when they were at high school, what they really wanted to do and be a marine scientist, what advice would you give to someone that's thinking, marine science sounds amazing, but where do I start?
So here's a question I actually get asked quite often because I do a lot of that school outreach and people often ask me, oh, what should I be studying? So if you're in year 11 or 12, you should definitely consider taking some of those science subjects. Like biology is a great one, chemistry, earth science, maths, even geography, they can all be quite useful. In saying that, you should look at the course you want to do and see if there's any prerequisites. So I think there's a lot of bridging courses you can do for things like chemistry and physics. I didn't do physics at school, but I needed it to do vet, and I was able to do like a fundamental physics course when I was in my first year. So there's definitely these bridging courses you can do if you don't quite get into it. I also think with high school, the best thing you can really do is do subjects that you love, because in the end, that's the thing you're passionate about and you'll do better doing things that you enjoy. I did a lot of art in high school. I love art. And I do a lot of art in my job now. I do a lot of design and I do a lot of drawing. So it does kind of, it feeds into it in one way or another. It might come back to being something that you enjoy. If you can, keep an eye out for any kind of citizen science or school marine programs that might be available if your school offers them. I have heard of different schools that have different aquaculture marine science subjects, or they might do different sort of scuba diving training as part of different outdoor education subjects and that sort of thing. Like, keep your eye out for those. But yeah, I'm definitely not a careers expert, so definitely check on prerequisites that are required for your degree if you're looking to study something. And yeah, those bridging courses are there if you're in year 12 and thinking, oh no, I want to do marine science and I haven't done the right subjects. do not worry, there is bridging courses available for these things that will help you get there.
Absolutely. Wow, I think I went to the wrong school, given that I never had an opportunity to do a lot of those sorts of things.
We didn't either. No, we had scuba diving in outdoor ed, actually.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I never did it, though.
I had biology, chemistry, sort of maths, English, that made me do English.
Yeah, English is good, though. English is one of the ones that I think we actually use all the time because we write so much.
I wanted to drop English, but I was told I had to do a humanity subject and geography didn't count as humanity.
I reckon I honestly think that's the thing we probably use the most.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny, isn't it?
And some of the maths. It is funny. Maths. Just reading about marine topics, watching documentaries and volunteering for beach cleanups or any volunteering opportunities can also spark that interest and give you something to talk about when you're applying for different uni positions or...
Of course, yeah. So having those kind of things help your applications for other things, I think it always looks good on your resume if you have some kind of, you can show in some way that you've done something connected to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the uni pathway. So what are some of the degrees that people can look into if they want to study marine science or marine biology?
Yeah, so many of our universities today will have degrees in specifically in marine science or marine biology, or they'll have them as majors as part of the Bachelor of Science. So in Adelaide University for next year, there'll certainly be a major in marine and wildlife conservation. But pretty much most of the universities around Australia will have some sort of marine offering. Some even offer field-based learning right from first year. Others, it's more like our international study tours where there's some field-based activities. They're usually for second and third year, but we've also got subjects like ecology subjects.
Yeah, you do field work in those. Yeah, it might be on land, or coastal. Land, yeah.
That's right.
Definitely. I mean, we are down here in South Australia and getting all students out scuba diving is not probably the easiest thing to do when we're in very much white shark territory. So I think that we don't have too much scuba diving or anything in our... Although, no, you do have a lot of scuba diving in Timor, though.
We do. Yeah. So our international study tour that runs to Timor-Leste, that does a dive course. And so if you haven't done any scuba diving, you do the basic open water. If you've already got the basic open water, you can do the advanced dive course. So, yeah, there's a dive course as part of that, which is pretty cool.
Definitely, definitely. So then once you've finished your undergrad, you can then choose to do an honours year. And that gives you a real first taste for doing research. So the honours year is about 8 months and it is sort of like a little dip your toe in to see if you like research. You get your own research project. You're very much supervised and helped by a researcher at the uni, so you're not out on your own. Often it might involve some field work, some lab work, some statistical work. It sort of depends on what your project is. They all differ quite a lot. But that is sort of an honours year, so that's just 8 months or about a year. And then once you do that, you might go on to do a PhD or head into a job in industry or government. Of course, there's also masters. Now, you did a master's, Bronwyn.
Yes, so when I went through, honours wasn't particularly common, and so it was basically a master's. But we're going to have masters of research, and there's also masters of philosophy, like 1 or 2 year kind of degrees.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, you could do masters or honours. They're similar in some ways. Honours is a bit shorter. It's a good way to test if you like research, while masters is more of a commitment. If you're certain that you want to go on and do a PhD, probably honours is a better pathway, and then you go across to the PhD after that. And then a PhD is a whole other world. That's like 3.5 to 4 years or anywhere upwards to 6 or 7. I don't know. People take a while to do PhDs sometimes.
Yeah, you usually get a scholarship that goes for 3.5 years. So in ideal land, you would complete within that time period.
Yeah, exactly. So lots of options for things to do at uni.
And, well, I guess also if you're already studying marine science and wondering what comes next, so my advice would be, what are you passionate about? What really interests you? What topics excite you? What skills do you need to then build to align with some of those? Just try and get experience that helps align with your interests, because it's so much easier to study, whether it's a PhD or it's earlier days in your career, if you're really enjoying what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. So that might be like volunteering on a research project or applying for a summer internship. There's lots of internships available both in Australia and also internationally. Talk to lecturers, postgrads about what they're doing, and then you'll be surprised how much networking can open up doors that you didn't even know were really there beforehand. So that's definitely a big recommend.
Absolutely. And the other thing to be really mindful of is careers don't just happen in a straight line, so they can zigzag. And I think both Nina and I have demonstrated that you can go out on a tangent and then come back and do something different along the way. So it's possible, like, if you think, oh, I'm not really enjoying this, switch, move to something that you do enjoy within the marine area.
And that's so normal.
Yeah.
You're never too old to make a career change.
So what would you say, Nina, to someone who wants a career in marine science but isn't sure if they're sciencey enough?
Well, that is a great question. First of all, I would say do not count yourself out. Marine science needs all kinds of thinkers, and it's not just scientists that we need. We need people that are creative, analytical, practical, and also really importantly, collaborative. If you care about the ocean, there is probably a place for you in this field. You just need to make sure you find an entry point that might suit you, and you don't really know where that might be.
Yeah, I love that. I'd add that sometimes the most interesting marine scientists are the ones who bring in something different. Like, I mean, part of what's been so great working with people like Nina has been the art and the science communication part. But there can also be people that are more interested in, say, the policy or the Indigenous knowledge or even engineering.
Yeah, they're all part of, and they all fit into each other. We need this big collaborative workforce of people to help fix some of the problems that the ocean is having. I think it's now more important than ever.
Yeah, so Nina, let's end with this. If someone listening is dreaming about becoming a marine scientist, what's your one piece of advice?
I guess my advice is to be curious and to ask questions. That's how we got into this in the first place. I would say we're both very curious, have curious minds. Get involved and, yeah, don't wait around for someone to tell you that you're ready. Just start and then see where it takes you. Bronwyn, what's your one piece of advice?
Focus on what you're passionate about and make the most of the opportunities that you see out there. So a bit like the study tour you mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sparked a real interest that's continued.
Say yes. Definitely say yes to things.
Absolutely.
Although
absolutely.
As you get more senior, like I'm sure Bronwyn's like this, but I love to say yes, but sometimes you're like, oh.
I've got to learn to say no sometimes. Yeah.
But when you're young and like getting into a career, definitely say yes.
Absolutely.
It will spark new ideas and new opportunities. So that brings us to the end of this episode. Whether you're in high school, uni, or just ocean curious, we hope this helped you to see how many pathways there are into marine science. I really love speaking with you, Bronwyn, about pathways and also our backgrounds. I learned a lot about Bronwyn's background. I didn't know that you had done a master's, I don't think.
Yeah, I've moved around a bit, so yeah. Thanks, Nina. I loved it too. So if you've got questions or stories that you want to share, reach out to us through social media or email. Our contacts are in the show notes. Don't forget to follow Ocean Pod wherever you listen to your podcasts and leave us a review if you enjoyed the episode. It helps more ocean lovers find us.
Music written and performed by Seamus Nicholas. Graphic design by Rhiannon Van Eck. This podcast is produced by us, Nina and Bronwyn, supported by the School of Biological Sciences at the University of Adelaide.